the Regional Services Director at the Ohio Secretary of State's office, and I would like to introduce our panel. I'm just going to give a name, title, and where they're from. If you would like to find out more information about them, there is bios in your packets. Kelly McCabe is to my left, Deputy Director of Belmont County Board of Elections. Eleanor Spielman is General Counsel and Director of Legislative Services at the Ohio Secretary of State's office. Petey Talley is Secretary Treasurer of the Ohio AFL-CIO. And Dan Takagi is Associate Professor of Law and Associate Director of Election Law at Moritz College of Law at the Ohio State University. First item on our agenda is expanding vote by mail, and I will turn it over to you guys.
Well, let me get started real quick. My name is Eleanor Spielman, and as Catherine already indicated, I'm General Counsel to Secretary of State Bruner, and that also gives me the privilege of being the Director of the Legal Services Division. Which means that the election lawyers, who any of you who are county officials, Board of Elections officials, are probably familiar with, each of our counties is assigned an election council, and I have several of them here, and they are foremost authorities on Title 35, and are several of them are here. I see a couple here at the middle table. They'll be my backup if this gets too statutorily technical. When I was talking to some people earlier today and they said, are you participating in a panel? I said, yes, vote by mail. And they said, well, just tell them that you like votes and you like mail. And at which point I said, and I'll also tell them I like males that vote. But moving on, let me just give you a little bit of a context about what I think we're talking about in terms of vote by mail. I think that you're probably expecting this to be about a concept where an entire election would be conducted through the mail. So it would be, in effect, a mandatory vote by mail. There would be no precinct polling places. There would be some scheme that's similar to what we use now in terms of mail-in absentee balloting. But there would be no option to have, we would not be setting up precinct polling locations. So does everybody agree that that's kind of the concept we're talking about? This is not entirely a novel proposition. My understanding is that right now there are 12 states throughout the country that allow this kind of an election in some circumstances or others. Primarily, people talk about the states of Washington and Oregon in the Northwest, who regularly conduct all their elections by a vote by mail process. Oregon, is my understanding, was initiated, became a mandatory mail-in election process through an initiative process, where the citizens of the state, after some experimentation at the local level, put an initiative on the ballot, and it was adopted by the citizens by a 69% in favor vote. Other states that use it are Washington, Colorado, Kansas, Missouri, Montana, Idaho, Nebraska, Minnesota. There's some variety in terms of, these are states where they use them in some elections, but not necessarily all elections. The idea is not novel in Ohio. My understanding from talking with election administrators in the office is that the idea has been bounced around not only in the Bruner administration, but also prior to that in the Blackwell administration and even in the Taft administration when Governor Taft was Secretary of State. And discussions have occurred, my understanding is, largely at the initiative of boards who feel that in some, in particular in special elections, in February and August elections, that there might be significant cost savings if they did not have to set up the precinct polling places. Apparently, although this has been discussed for a long time, it never really took off. My understanding is that the reception in the General Assembly was somewhat muted, and although there's been a lot of discussion, it's never been an idea in Ohio that's caught on. The Secretary's position is that it's worth investigating and looking into a little bit further, and specifically in terms of the special elections that occur, that this that the General Assembly should consider enacting legislation which would at least allow this as an option for boards at the local level to determine whether it makes sense for any, and on a case-by-case basis for a particular election. That's kind of where we are now. I know the Norden report did address this issue. There are some concerns, there are some advantages. The concerns, I think, are those that are often raised in terms of general absentee mail-in ballots. I'm sure Professor Takagi will let us know his thinking on some of those concerns. There is a concern about voter error, both in filling out the application process and the ballots themselves and returning them so that they might not be counted. There's also concern that although these are paper ballots, there's no opportunity for a scanner to notify the voter that there's something wrong with the way they actually filled in the ovals on their ballot. There are also concerns that have been raised about the security of the process. Will the ballots be intercepted somewhere between the mail, between the outbox, the out mailbox at the board and the mailbox of the voter? There are also concerns about whether this somehow provides a partisan advantage to one party or the other, although the experience in the states that have adopted it is that I think most people think it's probably ultimately a wash. There's also a big problem that we have to keep in mind, and that is people aren't going to get their sticker after they vote. Although maybe there would be a way we could do that.
You could mail us a sticker with the ballot.
Some of the advantages, though, I think, are reflected in what we saw in November, and there does seem to be a great degree of voter acceptance of the convenience factor in being able to vote when a voter has the time and inclination, so long as they meet the deadline for returning it. But elderly people, people who may have trouble on a Tuesday because of work and children and soccer, and there is some flexibility in terms of their convenience. And the experience, I believe, in Oregon is that a recent poll showed that 81% of their population favored the idea after having used it for a number of years. Another advantage is that voters don't have to worry about where it is they have to go to vote, because they don't have to go anyplace to vote. They can vote at home, basically. It's an advantage to boards who don't have to worry about no-shows of poll workers on election day. They don't need to worry about machine problems, so that the risk of late opening on poll day, on election day, is minimized. Well, it's eliminated because you're not opening the polls. There is also always the opportunity for a voter on a vote-by-mail system to contact the board if they have any questions, so that, and there's some time during the period with that they can do that if there's some confusion. There is a question of costs. The costs that are avoided in a mail-only election is the biggest cost that is avoided is the cost of paying poll workers. Anybody who runs a business knows that paying personnel salary costs are always a very high cost of an operation, and so that is eliminated. Boards speak of difficulties in recruiting poll workers, especially in February specials, where you have a lot of people. You can't draw on your snowbirds who may not be there. You may have people who have traditionally been poll workers who are reluctant to do it in a February special because of weather concerns. What if I can't get there? And the risk of bad weather itself in terms of conducting the election and getting your voters to turn out. You also would also avoid the cost of transporting the machines. You'd eliminate any costs and labor of conducting the machine testing and programming that you have to do in setting up for an election at a polling place. The biggest cost, the biggest trade-off cost in conducting it by mail is obviously the cost of postage. And we're all familiar with the fact that postage does not remain static. I'm sure there are people here who remember, like I do, when you could mail a letter for 5 cents. But that no longer is the case, and we're having another increase in postage within the next couple of months. You also need to print more ballots, obviously, because if you're going to rely on vote by mail, obviously you're going to have people voting on paper ballots. So there is that cost. So those are kinds of the pros and cons, kind of a brief overview that I wanted to give you. And in terms of whether it's a good idea or not, I'm sure we're all hoping to hear from you and your thoughts. And I'll turn it over to someone else to talk about their thoughts.
If I might give my two cents here, I think that Eleanor's provided a very fair summary of the overall debate regarding vote by mail. I want to start by just making absolutely sure we're all clear on our terminology here, because, you know, what I've seen in looking at election administration across the states is that people will often use the same term to describe two different things and sometimes use different terms to describe the same thing. As I understand it as well, our discussion here is focused on moving, at least to some extent, to an all-mail voting system. I think that's how people usually use the term vote by mail. We do, of course, have extensive mail-in absentee voting here in Ohio already, but this is really a significant step in that we'd be effectively closing down polling places, at least for some elections, and moving to an all-mail system. There actually is a fair amount of research that's been done on how this works in states that have experimented with it. The most noteworthy example is Oregon. And one of the things that is worth noting about Oregon is that, you know, they didn't make this change all of a sudden, all at once. I think all of us in this room, probably especially the election officials, have experienced and seen the difficulties that arise when we try to do too much change in the area of election administration too quickly. It's very complicated for everyone, especially poll workers, to digest that. And so I think in a sense, you know, if you were to go to an all-mail system, the way that Oregon did it, where it was a gradual transition over a period of many years where they effectively moved from a polling place-based system to one in which more people were voting by mail to one in which now basically everybody votes by mail, that's probably the best way to do that. Now, having said that, I want to note three concerns about moving to an all-mail system, and these are reasons why I actually think it would be a mistake for us to precipitously move in this state, or for that matter any other state, from a polling place precinct-based system to an all-mail system. Now, the first I'm just going to mention, I actually don't think this is a big factor, but this is something that you will hear a lot, is the argument about fraud, right? There's not much fraud in our system, but to the extent fraud exists, it's more likely to occur with mail voting. Most of the anecdotes have to do with mail voting, and if we go to an all-mail system, maybe we'll see a marginal increase in the risk. Now, having said that, I would note that there doesn't seem to be much evidence of that in Oregon. Second concern, which I think is a bit more serious, is mistake. Voters, as we all know, make mistakes, and the evidence we have suggests that they're more likely to make mistakes when they vote by mail. The information that I've seen from the Secretary of State's website from this most recent election indicates that of absentee voters, approximately 1.6 of those ballots were rejected for one reason or another. Now, that's worrisome and obviously could be enough to make a difference in a close election. By contrast, if there's a polling, you know, we heard, if you were here in this room for the last panel, we all know, you know, poll workers make mistakes, but at least if you have a poll worker there to help the voter, there's some opportunity to correct those mistakes. The third worry that I have about going to all-mail elections is, to my mind, the most serious, and that is that it will change the overall composition of the electorate and make it even less representative than it is right now of the citizenry as a whole. This is the effect that one commentator has referred to as the perverse consequences of election reform. Now, there is some evidence from Oregon in particular that going to an all-mail election will slightly increase overall turnout in at least some elections, generally low attention elections, right? Local elections where turnout tends to be lower. It does so, however, mostly by bringing in voters who are already the most likely groups to vote in the first place, by which I mean older, richer, generally whiter voters. The net effect, I would expect, of going to an all-male system would be to make our electorate older, richer, and whiter, albeit only slightly, but moving our electorate in the wrong direction, in my view, in terms of making it more representative of the public as a whole. Now, having said all this, those are my reservations, but I'm not opposed to our experimenting with all-male elections, especially on a local, limited basis, and evaluating the results, right? I mean, I've told you what I would expect, but I would be the first to admit I could be wrong. So, you know, it may be worth experimenting in some local elections and examining these questions if we do experiment. An experiment is no good unless you actually look at the results. So see, what impact did it have both on overall turnout and the representativeness of the electorate? Did we in fact see more voter mistakes and as a consequence more rejected ballots than we see in other elections? Did we in fact see an increase in fraud?
Good afternoon. I just want to, again, build on what Professor Takagi has said in terms of how we, if we're talking about moving into this vote-by-mail system, you know, doing it so that it's more experimental initially on rather than just jumping into it whole hog. I agree with him in terms of the number of people who could possibly opt out of the system because they're less likely to get their ballot, turn their ballot in. And I think Ohio still has a ways to go in terms of just studying who is actually using the absentee vote by mail, especially since we've just expanded in the last couple of elections, do some study on whether or not moving to a vote by mail system would be truly representative of the electorate. And I'm not sure that we're capturing, at least I thought I heard from the panel this morning, that we're not necessarily capturing that data yet in terms of the people who are voting absentee by mail. I'm not sure that as a representative of organized labor in the state that we have a position one way or another, but I will tell you this, that our union members in Oregon, particularly the postal workers in Oregon, they take heart with the care and handling of those ballots. The president of the National Association of Letter Carriers in Portland says it's a patriotic thing. So in terms of job security for postal workers, we would definitely be very strong advocates for an all vote by mail system. But we have to be careful because we also represent workers who are actually poll workers at boards of elections across a number of platforms either. So we don't want to trade one for the other, and certainly would be trying to find a balance for that. I do think, though, that just moving to a vote-by-mail system, I think we still need to do a lot more analysis of what this last election showed us in terms of the number of people who increased and voted by absentee. I don't know if that helps to tell us or helps inform the discussion about if we move to an all vote by mail system, whether or not we would be successful or not successful. We heard a lot this morning on the panel about the difference between voting by mail absentee and now no fault absentee in person. And I don't want to digress away from the subject, but the one thing that we kept going to this morning on the panel was the discussion about voting in person absentee had all of these different challenges. And the one thing I don't think we thoroughly explored is why are we talking about absentee? Why can't we look at legislation that would give us a true early vote on a regular ballot versus an absentee vote? in order to separate out the two in terms of someone who is actually absent from a polling site, voting from home, voting by mail, versus someone who's actually going in, whether they're going in 35 days ahead of time or they're going in on election day. So I just think that we have to do a lot more analysis before we actually move to a system where we're voting 100% by mail and really take a look at that. I think the pros have been laid out. Certainly the drawbacks in terms of moving to that kind of system have been articulated already by Eleanor on the panel. And I just think that as we think this through, does it really, what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to make sure that more people are able to participate in the process? I think 1.7 million people voting absentee does already say something about where our electorate is willing to go in terms of changing the way we kind of vote in the state of Ohio. But I think we have to, if we're proceeding down a path of going exclusively voting by mail, which, you know, has some challenges, that we should at least analyze what people are already saying in terms of how they're voting currently. And I'm not sure that we've thoroughly come up with data to cause us to jump headfirst into a vote by mail system.
Kelly, as a deputy director, what are your views on vote by mail? And how do you think Ohio could best explore shifting specific elections like primaries, special elections to a vote by mail process?
In the 2004 presidential election, we had 5,024 absentee requests and ballots mailed out. Now, we did not automatically send a request to people, but in 2008, along with the election notice, we also sent out an application for an absentee ballot. We had 13,495 absentee ballots. So clearly, in our county, people rather vote absentee. That was 40% of our total voters chose to vote absentee in the last election. I think that Belmont County would really like to try a special election totally vote by mail because you can control that better. You know how many workers you'll need to count your ballots because you know how many ballots you sent out. I don't know how. One question though, how do we do that? Do we automatically send every registered voter an application? Do we leave it up to them to call us and request one? So how would we handle that?
Okay. One-time registration for vote by mail, so leading into that topic. Currently, voters must request to vote by mail in any election in the state of Ohio. This leads to a rash of paperwork for boards to process right before an election. Should Ohio allow voters to use annual or biannual vote by mail ballot applications, thus guaranteeing the voter a ballot in all elections? How would this impact party affiliation for partisan primaries? What mechanisms would be needed to cancel, transfer, or renew a request?
Well, let me take a shot at this. I mean, here I think we're not talking about vote by mail in the way that that term is usually used. We're really talking about, if I understand the question correctly, permanent absentee status, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because, you know, if we were to go to a true vote by mail, meaning an all-mail system, then everybody's going to get that mail ballot. We're talking, assuming we keep the current framework where you have to choose to vote absentee, should we allow people to vote, to choose to have that status and to automatically get their mail ballot for, you know, all elections or at least for some period of time? And many states now do this. I took a look at all 50 states' laws, and by the way, the Moritz College of Law is currently doing a 50-state study of all states' laws, among which this is one of the things we're looking at, permanent absentee status. You know, I think it, at least for some groups of voters, it may well make sense to consider permanent absentee status. And I'm thinking particularly of elderly people or people with disabilities that make it difficult for them to go to the polling place. I'm a little more, I won't say opposed to, but a little more concerned about extending that to all voters. I mean, I suppose some of those voters might actually change their minds at some point and try to show up at the polling place and cause problems. for you. And, you know, I guess with permanent absentee status, I suppose the worry about fraud at some point may also creep in. Again, I don't think that fraud, even with mail ballots, is very common, but I could imagine that problem arising at some point.
So do you think it could lead to higher provisional ballot numbers, as if someone changes their mind, goes to the polls, would have to vote provisionally, or if someone moved and didn't update their registration or their absentee status, they would have to vote provisionally as well?
I think it's possible, yeah.
Anyone else?
Well, I'll address the issue about partisan affiliation. I don't believe that that would be a significant concern, unless it would be considered a significant concern that if you ask for a Democrat ballot in one election, you're going to be deemed to be a Democrat from the time you return that ballot going forward. So that if someone then thereafter decided, I'm fed up with the Democrats, they had their chance, I want to affiliate with the Republican Party, they would have to take an affirmative step. So the being designated as an absentee ballot for an extended period of time would not necessarily implicate that. I don't see it as a concern, others may. I think in general, it's not asking too much of a voter who wants to change his affiliation with a political party to take an affirmative step to make that change known to the elections officials.
Okay. Anyone else?
In Belmont County, I could see that as a problem because we have areas that have a lot of rental property. People constantly move. I see ballots out there floating around with, they're not going to who they were supposed to go to. That would definitely be a big problem in our county.
Yeah, I would add to that also. I think, you know, when we're sending out, when boards of elections send out the notice of election, I mean, the hundreds of thousands of notices they get returned to the boards of elections, I mean, already suggests that we have an electorate that's very transient. And the question, you know, would become, once a person makes a designation to get an absentee ballot, I mean, how would we keep, I mean, the partisan piece set aside, but how do you even keep up with where those folks are? I think it's incumbent upon voters if they want to change, if they're receiving a particular party ballot, if they want to change parties, that's on the voter. But the question is, where do you mail the ballot if you only allow people to enroll one time and not have a way to go back in and check to see if they've made the necessary change?
And I know the board saw how when they sent out the notices and how many came back to the board, and that was just like a postcard size.
Correct.
So the cost of how many ballots are going out and then coming back and the waste of postage cost for that as well. Going into postage, paid vote by mail. The cost of mailing ballot applications and the ballots themselves can be costly. In addition, return ballots often require odd postage amounts. Should the state help promote vote by mail by mailing applications to all voters once per year? Should the state cover the postage costs for returning the voted ballots? Petey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to the point that I just kind of raised a little bit in terms of mailing out these applications and actually finding the voters that you're trying to mail the actual application to. I do know from the organized labor standpoint, as well as many political parties and or candidates, they actually take on the role of sending applications out to their potential voters. Or, you know, we mail out to encouraging our members to not wait in line, but actually, you know, ask for an absentee ballot. So the way I understand it now, any advocacy group or candidate or whoever can actually mail an application. So even if we went down that avenue, it wouldn't necessarily be something that the state might exclusively have to bear the cost of, because it is very expensive. I know when we do it, and I can only imagine that it would be so on state government and or local government, especially in the current economic climate. So maybe partnering with advocate organizations who might already be doing this is a way that it could be promoted by the state, that you know, more people using the application, absentee application to vote, could be a way to at least realize some cost savings if in fact that's an area that we want to look at.
I think it's also interesting to note Kelly's statistics, where she had almost, what, a 300% increase or something in the terms. Now, of course, we have to keep in mind that this was the difference between having to have an excuse for an absentee and not having to have one. But still, I think statewide, the statistics were something like 30% of the overall vote was done through an absentee process, not all of which was through the mail, but I think the majority was through the mail. I think it's going to be interesting as we go forward, even if no changes, no big changes are made between in the next year or two in terms of overall structure of elections, to see what voters tell us by their feet. If we continue to show these kinds of numbers, and particularly if they increase, where voters have the opportunity to vote through the mail by requesting an absentee ballot, going through the two-step process, basically, of asking for the, or sending in the application and then subsequently sending in the ballot, there may be a time where it no longer is practical to fund basically three alternative methods of voting, which is where we are now. We have the opportunity to wait for election day and go in as people always have. We have the opportunity to vote absentee through the mail, and in this last election we had the opportunity to vote to the board or to an alternative voting location and voting absentee in person. And that not only, it's a great thing for voters to have that smorgasbord of how to vote, but it does create problems for the boards and costs. So it'll be interesting. I think that this may be one of those situations, we'll see what happens, where the voters may be a little bit ahead of the policy makers and the academic thinkers, and they may drive the answer to this question. It we'll have to wait and see.
So responding to the first question first, whether the state should help promote vote by mail by mailing applications to all voters once per year, I have somewhat mixed feelings on this question. I mean, you know, on the one hand, there's some obviously good things about having more people vote in advance of the election, especially in a high turnout election like the one we just had, particularly taking pressure off the polling places on election day, which is especially significant in large urban areas like this one. On the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, you know, voters tend to make more mistakes when they vote by mail. My preference would be, for that reason, to, wherever possible, channel them towards early voting, or as we call it here, in-person absentee voting, rather than mail voting. But, you know, the calculus may change a bit. I think my inclination is to say, in response to this first question, I don't know that I would mail absentee ballot applications to voters in every election cycle, but perhaps in presidential general elections it makes sense to do that. I would say, and this is a controversy that I know arose in this past election, I think we should have uniformity statewide on this so that voters in some jurisdictions don't find it easier to vote than others. I think that even if that's not technically an equal protection violation, it is an equality issue, and I think there should be a uniform practice one way or the other throughout the state. On the second question, should the state cover the postage cost of returning voted ballots? On this one, I guess I have a more definite answer. I think the state should. You know, the last thing I'd want to see is people being unable to return their absentee ballot because you know, they don't have the postage, or the U.S. mail rejecting it because they didn't put on enough postage. Now, obviously, we're in difficult financial times here in this state, as in every other state. So I don't know how how practicable that's going to be at this point, but if the question is just would I like to see that, the answer is yes.
I guess I'm wondering if there must be somebody out there that's saying if they'll just give me an opportunity, I'll go to the mic. This is.
You can always count on Peg.
Yeah.
This is one I feel I know something about because I wrote a book on vote by mail. And I would definitely recommend that if we're going to go to vote by mail for everything, start with nonpartisan issue only special elections and do it for a few years so the boards decide whether they like it or not and the logistics of it. Do it absolutely all by mail with the board sending out the ballot to every registered voter, paying the postage both ways. The board can get cheap postage sending it out anyway, and we can't. That's how we find out whether we like it, whether it works, any of the problems, and sort it out only with, we'll probably mostly use it with those February and August elections. Maybe occasionally with the primary if there are no just issues on the ballot. This is the way most states do it. And the other piece that wasn't part of my study, but certainly is becoming more important, and that's to clean up the language of the vote, of the ballot, the requirements, the whole ID stuff. Make it very simple, and all the good things people have talked about that they've tried that make that easier so that people don't screw up their ballots. And of course, the other one that one of my pet hobby horses is get the ballot shorter. It isn't, as we talked in earlier one, it isn't the number of candidates, it's the length of the issues. And if we're only doing issues only, don't put the whole explanation of the issue on the ballot. Arrange so that people know where they can get information. Send along with it, commercial, the League of Women Voters background information on the issue so people know the pros and cons. Thank you.
Well, stemming from Peg's question, if you go to trying out the vote by mail during special elections, should the entities bringing the levies or questions to the ballot have a say if their election is the one that is the experiment, since they're the ones paying for the election and that might be the only school levy or something on the ballot?
Obviously a policy consideration. that the policymakers and in the democratic process would have to be hammered out in the legislation that would authorize this. I think maybe Kelly can tell us, that's my understanding, is that it's these issues where you've got one school levy and the board has to set up to handle a special election, that's, as Peg said, the situation where this is seem to be the most beneficial.
If they got to choose whether it was a mail election or whether they wanted people to go to the polls, I would bet they're going to want people to go to the polls because they wouldn't want everybody to get a ballot. So then we wouldn't be having an all-mail election, maybe.
Even if you crossed it with, it's a lot cheaper to do it this way?
Yes, because they probably might not get their money.
Go ahead.
Hi, Catherine. Dale Fellows, Lake County. If I could weigh in on a couple of these. Number one, as far as expanding and the all mail, I'll just tell you two quick stories, one that I know of personally and one that I heard at an IACRIAT meeting, which is the International Elections Officials and Clerks and Treasurers. A number of years ago, they tried all mail election in a pretty large area of Texas, and there was a lot of fraud that occurred. There was interception of ballots. There was intimidation of seniors. There was activist groups who went out and demanded to see how the people were going to vote, if they were part of their membership, et cetera, et cetera. And before that, I was kind of an advocate for it. When I heard that, it changed my mind. And this was a real life story. On the flip side, we got special dispensation in Lake County a number of years ago to do an all-male election in one community that was having a single issue, and it worked very well. However, we did do where you had to, we did send out the application. People had to ask for the ballot. We didn't just automatically send out a ballot, and I think that was a good way to do. And also, I think, if I remember right, the cost was borne by the community. And it was a chargeback situation, so the community did pay for that. And I'm an advocate for that demonstration of my patriotism, of my democracy, of going out on election day and actually voting on election day instead of by mail. So I would like to keep that personal part and that demonstration of democracy still alive and not ever go to an all-mail election, except maybe in these special elections. Number two, on the one-time registration, we have such a volatile, and we've been talking about that in other sessions, electorate. They're all over the place, and Kelly mentioned it in Belmont County. I mean, we've got that everywhere throughout the state, especially the urban areas. So you have seniors who do pass away, and if no one knew that they passed away, like we didn't know at the Board of Elections, we can't just take them off the rolls. And that leaves an opportunity for someone else to use their ballot or vote. We also have a lot of seniors who are exiting Ohio for a lot of tax reasons. And if they were still on this permanent thing, they'd be getting ballots. And again, you have a lot of ballots out there floating around. So I would not be an advocate for that. And on the last one, I have a little different twist on this, a little different thought, is you have a lot of advocacy groups, as was mentioned, that send out applications. And, you know, it's like, how many applications can we send? And when you got a budgetary situation, that's one major consideration. Now, we did it in Lake County. And between, I can't tell you how many came in from our application, how many came in from the advocacy groups, but ours had similar numbers to Kelly. Ours went from 18,000 a couple years ago to 45,000 this year. So we had quite a bump in absentees. But on the last question, as far as the state covering the postage, in taking a little different turn to this and uniformity, if we were to pay for returning those ballots, should we then in turn pay myself or others who voted in-house or on election day for the gas that we spent going to the polls in the case of being uniform? It's, you know, is it giving one person an advantage over another? And I don't remember, I've yet to hear any particular incidents where somebody said, I couldn't send my absentee ballot back because I didn't have the postage. I didn't hear that. But I did hear one of the points. We did have situations in Lake County where we did pay the additional postage when somebody undervalued how much it was to send it back. And fortunately, and I'd hate to ever see that happen where someone did put some postage on and it didn't get counted or fell through the cracks because of that. So that's where working with the postal system and maybe the postal union would be more gracious in lowering their rates for this special patriotic endeavor.
Yeah. Let me just quickly comment on three things that you mentioned. First, the fraud/coercion issue. I haven't studied the Texas example that you gave, but I think an interesting point that your comment raises is the fact that, you know, with absentee ballots, the secrecy of the ballot, which is a big check on both fraud and coercion in our system, is potentially compromised. Now, you know, I do think that examples of it are not terribly common, but in addition to fraud, which we mentioned earlier, there is at least the risk of coercion, especially, and we've seen, you know, some examples of this, especially in homes for seniors, where their votes are, you know, their ballots are voted in a particular way, sometimes perhaps under pressure or without the person knowing what's going on. I mean, that is a risk with mail ballots generally, and perhaps it's marginally increased if we go to an all-mail system. The second point, the civic ritual, as I've referred to it in an article I wrote on them, I mean, I think that's something that is important to people. Maybe some of us don't care, but for some of us, the civic ritual of actually going to the polling place with our fellow citizens on election day is something that we value, and that may be another reason why we should be more hesitant to implement it, at least in, you know, federal general elections, where that factor probably comes most into play. Third, I like this very law professor type hypothetical about, you know, if we're going to pay for postage for those who vote by mail, should we also pay for the gas of people who go to the polling place? My law professor hypothetical answer is, I don't think that necessarily follows. I don't think there's really an equal protection problem there, because if everybody has the opportunity, at least, to vote by mail and to have that postage paid for, then there's no real equal treatment problem.
And I was just throwing it out as a thought. But also, you know, in these days with the budget crunch and things like that, I guess the question, is it necessary? Is it that cost benefit? That is it necessary? How many people are really
I want to address the civic ritual thing a little bit too, because I kind of share your kind of attachment, that kind of gut good feeling. But frankly, and the secretary has made great strides in this, but we still had people who waited an hour in line. And my feel good feeling about the civic ritual is kind of cut away a little bit when there's this fear, whether justified or not, that participating in the civic ritual is going to require me to stand in line for an extended period of time.
Can I also add a little bit to that? Is that, I mean, we had this no excuse early absentee voting, which most of us as advocates billed as you won't have to wait in line. And in fact, my sister-in-law, she came to me and she said, I said, are you going to go vote, you know, a week or so into the early voting, early absentee voting period? She said, oh, no, I'm going to wait for election day. And I, with everything in me, I talked her out of it. I absolutely talked her out of it. And she still went down and voted early and waited in line for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, right.
So I think that education, the voters being educated about the three systems that we currently have, what, you know, which, you know, cost aside, just I think people are rising to whatever level they feel comfortable about. I think people, after the 2000 election, people finally woke up and said, well, wait a minute, I need to pay attention, and maybe there is something I need to do to alter my behavior to ensure that my ballot is counted. And so the electorate in Ohio, I think, either went to an early vote center to ensure that their vote would be counted because they thought that was the right system for them, or they requested an application for an absentee ballot and they mailed it in because they thought that was the right thing for them to do, or they came and voted on election day because that was what they thought was the right thing to do. And I think we're probably a couple elections away from really knowing what is going to be the right system for us here in Ohio, because 1.7 million people opting to use a system that they couldn't use in the 2004 election, I think is sending a strong message, and they did that in a couple ways. They either went and waited in line early, or they sent in a mail-in ballot. And so I just think that as we talk about this vote by mail, which is intertwined with no-fault absentee voting, and I don't know how we can separate the two. It seems like there should be some kind of separation there, because it seems like they're both so connected together. I just think that we need to, I think we're a couple elections away from really saying this is one way or another. I think you could try and experiment with an initiative or maybe a special election. And I'm thinking particularly about the Cleveland election, which was not a referendum, but when they had the special election to fill the congressional seat where voter turnout was so low. And I know that the cost for that was so high. So maybe it's not a referendum or an initiative, maybe it's a special election that can be teased out a little bit more to see what the will of the voters will be in terms of how, you know. I just think that the voters have a lot to say about the kind of voting systems that we have in Ohio, and we could learn something.
If I could just real quick, your comments, right? The issue that we did do was a single issue, and the voter turnout was very, very high, and it was a very small contained election, so it was very good. And to segue on what Eleanor said, the interesting phenomenon this year, and I think many of the boards experienced the same thing, is I think in our county, the longest line I ever heard of was an hour, and that was first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. However, the day before and the days before that, it was three and four hours. So folks were, I'm like telling people, you know, if you come back on election day, you probably won't stand in line for more than 10 or 15 minutes, which was more the average. So it was kind of that phenomenon. And I think, you know, the 1.7 million that votes, I'm not sure what the number was in 04, but it was probably about half that. So we probably increased by maybe close to a million voters. And giving them those options, I think, was a real, real plus. But I just, you know, my whole thing is I just really like to go in on election day. Even though I can, as an election official, vote any time I want to go in and do that.
And put the sticker on.
I do, right, exactly.
The phenomenon of people waiting longer in line to vote before election day, I'm wondering if anybody thinks that part of that was the fact that the voter knows that there's a backup, that if something happens on the day they show up, they still have election day. They can walk away and still vote. Whereas if something happens and you go in on election day and there's a long line, mm-hmm. you're stuck. It's you know, you don't have a backup. And I don't know if there's any way we could gather that kind of thing. But frankly, that's how I voted in the fall. And one of the reasons was, well, if I show up and there's a long line, I can come back tomorrow or I can come back next mm-hmm. week, mm-hmm. which you don't have if you wait until election day and just assume you're going to do it on that day.
Stuart?
Well, I'm just concerned about the one-time registration for vote by mail. And does Oregon actually do that? And don't they get a lot of return ballots from people that are moved and things like that?
Doesn't Oregon send them to every registered voter?
You're talking, let me clarify the question. That the question is, in Oregon, you automatically get a mail, well, let me give you the answer. In Oregon, you automatically get a mail ballot. I mean, everybody gets their ballot by mail.
So aren't a lot of those misaddressed because the people have moved?
I haven't seen numbers on that, but in every state, there are some people on the voting rolls who are either no longer alive or no longer living where they lived at the time when they last registered or corrected their information. So inevitably, yes.
And I think in Oregon, there is a certain responsibility in voter education to people that your ballots will be sent out and you should receive it in this time frame. And if you haven't, then you should call your board. So that there is a certain responsibility that's put on the voter if they don't receive it to do something about it.
And then if the post office returns it saying no, the addressee is not at this address, are they automatically removed from the registration rolls?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but that is a potential added benefit to mandatory all vote by mail, and that is because you are sending out ballots more regularly over time. You should be able to clean up your voter registration lists because as ballots come back on a more frequent basis, the board should be able to figure out what happened to these voters.
They can't be removed for that reason alone under the NVRA.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
It triggers the NVRA.
Right.
Yes, I know a lot of the elections officials after the national change of address and NVRA, you guys knew exactly what 60-day notices were going to come back to the board when you sent them out. Go ahead.
Thanks. I'm Alfie Charles. I'm with Pitney Bowes, but I used to be with the California Secretary of State's office. And I think in California, we have a permanent absentee, a one-time request and permanent absentee. And I recently moved from one county to another. And the experience I had was that within about a month of filling out the change of address with the Postal Service, my former county in Sacramento, mm-hmm. sent a postcard to me to confirm that I had indeed moved, and reminded me to fill out a registration form in my new county.
Yeah.
I filled out the registration form, and on the new form in California, there's a checkbox that enables you to request permanent absentee status. So I checked that. My wife didn't. I get a ballot every time she does, and then.
So it's right on the voter registration form, basically. Like,
right.
When you change your address, it was right there.
So, and a number of counties also sent out, when that permanent absentee law took effect, a number of counties sent out postcards that had two purposes. One was to validate the names on their voter registration file, so if they bounced back, they would know that there was an issue with that address, and also it was to invite people to become permanent absentees. And that percentage is now upwards of 50% in a number of counties, and that helps them juggle their election day costs, election day planning, their ballot ordering. It also reduces the burden on processing those applications, because we used to have a high vote by mail percentage anyway, but applications were processed each election because of party registration drives or the forms that counties were sending out anyway. So there is a way to make sure that you're not sending out those ballots forever. That change of address program will notify the county so that they can go take the corrective action before you send out ballots forever.
Right.
And in the unlikely or in the event that somebody moves and they haven't changed that address yet, it's a live ballot, but it's not counted if it doesn't come back with that signature and all those other checks and balances that you're already incorporated into that vote by mail process.
Thank you. Mr. Buckle?
Bill Buckle, Franklin County. I'm really appearing in this instance as a voter to think outside the box a little on the costs associated. The primary elections are, in terms of voter decision-making information, pretty barren. The League of Women Voters Bulletin comes out for the general election, so the primary elections are primarily partisan processes. So if we could eliminate the whole election, we'd save more money than just streamlining it. In the case of city council in Columbus, they have nonpartisan primary elections, and that's the way they weed out the independents. So it's really voter fraud we're supporting with our tax money. The judges run in primary elections as party-endorsed candidates, and then they run independent in the general election. So it's a kind of a get outside the box. Maybe a lot of this is a little goofy to begin with, is all I want to say. And as a voter, I wish we could settle down to one November election. Thank you.
Well, Bill, Missouri has elections only every 2 years, so.
You're going to go every 2 years?
In Missouri, so just to let you know.
Well, in that case, you could have the feds pay for it because you always got a federal candidate out there.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jones, Summit County. One of the things I've talked to Sherrod Brown about is getting a franking privilege for the ballots, and there's a federal election, so every 2 years we'd have the feds would pay for the ballots, both going and coming. I mean, we get their stuff in the mail, their congressional newsletter. Those are all franked anyway, so thinking about that. One thing we had a problem with Summit County was a late postmark.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, a lot of them come in without a postmark because they're big envelopes. They come in, there's no postmark, so that's a concern. The other issue, we have a recall election going on, probably in Akron in about 45 days. It really makes sense to do that by mail if we could. It's going to cost us $175,000 to do it, and probably do it for a fourth of that if we did it by mail. Thanks.
If I might just respond to your first point, I think it's a great idea. You know, I've written that federal elections are our nation's oldest unfunded mandate, and you know, the federal government is actually allowed to do that under the Constitution. I think that's a correct interpretation of the Constitution, but the federal government should chip in where it can, not just on a one-time only basis as it did with HAVA, but on a continuing basis to help subsidize elections which include federal offices on them at least. So, you know, I'm generally supportive of anything that would encourage the federal government to kick in more money for running elections. I'm not holding my breath, though.
I somehow think that the Postmaster General might disagree, but
Especially right now that they're trying to take a day of mail delivery out of the week and only deliver 5 days.
But, you know, this is really, I mean, for the post office, I'm sure that they would, but it's a drop in the bucket from their perspective, or should be.
Hello.
Hi. My name is Sharon Lee. I'm from the Harrison County Board of Elections Office. And I think vote by mail would be a wonderful thing for issues only, for, just like they said, for special elections in February and in August. We're a very rural county in Harrison County, and we have a couple school districts that overlap. And a couple years ago, we had a special election in August, I believe it was. And the one precinct had a potential of about 50 voters that were like at the end of that precinct to come and vote. We got the permission from the Secretary of State's office to set up and only use 2 poll workers in that certain precinct. Those gals came in, sat there all day, saw their first voter at 7:30, and never saw another voter all day. Then the other overlapping school district issue that we had same day, but different part of the county, I think they had the potential for several hundred and basically had 14 voters there that day. But, you know, and this, what we thought at the time was, wouldn't it have been great if we could have just done this all by mail? Save, you know, the LNA on all the machines, you know, all the work involved, all of that. But the other thing I wanted to say was, in the gubernatorial election in 2006, we had quite a few ballots that came that were returned for lack of postage. And some of them were college kids, and some of them were elderly or whoever, you know, just put one stamp on them, and that wasn't enough to send them. Well, this time that didn't happen because our postal department said, and our mailman that delivers to the courthouse said to us that they did some research and found out they were not within their rights to hold those up. And so we even had ballots delivered to our Board of Elections office that had no postage on them. Now, there were only a few of those, but, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But I know in 2006 that was a problem with ballots that were returned back to the voter for lack of postage. And, you know, and some of them were college kids, and I remember thinking, well, this may or may not even get back, you know, to us in time. And that was a problem. But like I said, this year they slid them on through.
I know some counties, it's different every election, or they either don't get them, they do get them. It's oftentimes just different situations. We still have about 10 minutes if anyone else has any questions.
Or we can all go outside and drink coffee.
Either way.
I don't really have a question, but I do have a comment. And I'm like her, I think that a vote by mail for special elections would be great. Reason being, we had one in February, and we're going to have another one in May. And we don't know about August or anything. We hope not. But anyway, it's going to cost a lot of money, you know, to do 3. Mm-hmm. And we have to do the same amount of work whether we have 10 voters or 10,000 voters. We have to prepare everything the same.
Yeah.
The only thing we didn't have to do was send out all of our machines. We could send out 2 less machines to every precinct, and we had less rovers. And other than that, we've done everything the same.
I'm sorry, could you state your name and what county?
Oh, sure, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My name is Kate Cameron. I'm from Highland County. And our county is very rural,
mm-hmm.
and from the big election we had, and we had about 2,200 people to vote in February,
mm-hmm.
and we expect maybe twice that many in May. It won't be a primary, it'll just be a special, because in our city council and stuff, we didn't have anybody that was running, you know, against each other, so it'll just be a special election. And these both are countywide, so.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's all.
I guess the one thing I want to say is that as we talk about special elections and, you know, having to set up for 10 voters versus 10,000 voters being the same cost, I think one of the things that we have to kind of keep in mind is that, and I think Brian said it this morning on the panel, there are just some races that voters just don't want to participate in. And so even if we move to a vote-by-mail system for like these special elections or ballot initiatives, I mean, are we gonna be, once we're into it, are we gonna say that the cost for postage now is going, you know, is not worth it because we're still only getting 10 voters to participate in the process? It seems to me that, you know, people are just opting out of some elections, and I don't know how we work that particular variable into the equation as we think about, you know, which elections that we would, you know, move from to a vote-by-mail system vote versus a voting in-person system. And I just will go back to the question of the, you know, I'm not sure we actually give voters the credit that they deserve in terms of them making decisions about whether they want to participate and or not participate. I think what we have to do as advocates, as election administrators, is just to make sure the election is open, honest, fair, transparent, and all of those things are in place so people have the opportunity to vote. And, you know, it costs what it costs. It costs what it costs just based on what the electorate is going to do. And maybe some of our money could be better spent doing more voter education to tell, you know, tell people why it's important to participate in a special election.
Yeah. And just a couple quick points. I mean, as much as I care about and love democracy and spend an inordinate amount of my time writing and thinking and talking about it, as Petey's comment suggests, I do think, you know, we could make a plausible argument that there is something of an excess of democracy in this country sometimes. We vote on a lot of different things, and sometimes, let's face it, the public just doesn't care or isn't informed about a lot of them. The leading example from my perspective is judges, and as a lawyer, I have to say that I think electing judges is about the worst idea that our democracy has ever come up with. But that's a topic for a different day. It does seem to me that as I'm listening to the comments of the last two people who asked questions or made comments, you know, the strongest case for moving to all-mail systems, I think, can be made in smaller local elections, especially in rural areas. And as I said at the outset, I have some worries about all-mail elections, but I'm not opposed to experimenting. But if we're going to do that, it is imperative that we not only do this, but we have some plan in place for systematically studying what happens, including the mistakes that voters make, and including how it affects the composition of the electorate.
Yes, sir. Could you state your name, please?
Bill Herdman from Brown County. How accurate are our mailing addresses? I know in some cases when we make out a mailing, we get 20% back for whatever reason. Either it was the wrong address or it was a post office box, should have been an address, should have been a post office box. And are there any numbers as to what percentage of mailings come back?
Not statewide that I know of.
Inform me on the law. Do we have to keep people on our registration rolls for how many years? Does anybody can give me the, just after a federal election? 4 years. So in other words, if someone dies or moves, we have to keep them on for.
No, if someone dies, the county health department informs the county board, and then they can
and
remove.
And then they're taken off the rolls mm-hmm. immediately.
And then the clerk of court's office informs when someone's been convicted of a felony and imprisoned.
I know when I make out a political mailing, I get about 20% back, just for one reason or another, at the wrong address,
mm-hmm.
and you'd multiply that by millions, there's a lot of money there.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? We have a couple more minutes. I guess everyone wants coffee. All right, thank you all very much.